The morning they came for her, Karen Sage was still a newlywed. Armed officers stormed through her door at dawn, claiming to have found cocaine, drugs that would later prove to be planted. As they drove her away, she glimpsed something that would haunt her forever. Her two beloved German shepherds, Vanessa and Diana, poisoned and dying by the roadside. Her husband, Rick, wept silently beside her. This wasn't supposed to happen to people like them, wealthy, connected, protected by privilege. But in 1970s Brazil, under a military dictatorship backed by American intelligence, no one was truly safe. Karen Kielt's memoir doesn't just recount her 45 days of torture in a Brazilian prison. It exposes how easily the veneer of civilization can crack, revealing the brutal machinery of state-sponsored violence beneath. Her story forces us to confront uncomfortable questions. What happens when the people meant to protect you become your torturers? How does someone rebuild a life after experiencing the worst of human cruelty? And perhaps most disturbingly, how complicit were American intelligence agencies in creating the systems that destroyed innocent lives? Karen's childhood in Sao Paulo's exclusive Santamaro neighborhood appeared idyllic. 8,000-square-foot colonial home, maids, cooks, chauffeurs, international travel, private education. Yet beneath this polished surface lurked consuming darkness. Her father ruled with unpredictable rage. Once, furious over her brother's perceived laziness, he smashed her mother's prized Meissen tea set, porcelain shards scattering across marble floors like emotional shrapnel. These explosions grew so severe that her mother sent 12-year-old Chris to American boarding school for protection. Karen grew up essentially alone, finding companionship among household servants. Strange incidents hinted at her father's mysterious activities. He once used a bleeding man in their car as an observation lesson before hastily dropping him at a clinic. Another time, he took her to a grimy New York apartment to supposedly inject a war friend with gangrene, a man Karen never actually saw. Years later, she wondered if he'd gone there to kill someone. The family routinely smuggled contraband into Brazil. When plainclothes police once confiscated their goods and detained her father for hours, young Karen glimpsed the corruption that would later consume her life. Meeting Rick Sage felt like finding solid ground. They connected at an art gallery, fell deeply in love, and got engaged. Rick was everything Karen longed for, determined, ambitious, warm. When her previous suitor, Martin, had confronted her father, the older man had threatened deportation and fired shots into the ceiling. Rick remained undaunted, confident he could win her father's approval. Their engagement brought a 2-carat Tiffany diamond and the promise of escape. They planned 2 weddings, a civil ceremony in New York and a grand affair in Brazil on January 4, 1976. The Brazilian wedding was lavish. Her father presented her with a treasured family heirloom, a ruby and diamond necklace symbolizing a father's sadness at giving away his daughter. But something was off. Armed military police guards in parade uniforms were stationed throughout the property, arranged by her father's friend, Sao Paulo's police chief Sergio Fleury. At the time, it seemed like an honor. Looking back, Karen understood the truth. It was surveillance. The military dictatorship was watching. Within months, the same police chief who attended their wedding would order their arrest. The guards at their reception weren't celebrating. They were gathering intelligence. The torture method known as the parrot's perch involves suspending a victim upside down on a wooden dowel between 2 sawhorses, then applying electric shocks from a car battery. Karen would experience this firsthand during her 45 days in DEIC prison, a facility notorious for making people disappear. The prison's putrid stench, raw sewage mixed with fear, rotting flesh, and death hit her first. Guards separated her from Rick despite his desperate bribes. A man Karen would later identify as Junior raped her before dragging her to a women's cell block where other prisoners appeared broken, huddled in corners or lying in fetal positions on dirt floors. The conditions were medieval. A hole in the floor for a toilet, a rusty spigot providing brown water, inedible food. Karen retreated into numbness, counting bugs and water drops. When her torture sessions began, she heard Rick's agonized screams before experiencing her own. They commanded her to strip, bound her wrists, and suspended her upside down on the parrot's perch. The electric shocks burned her flesh. She screamed names, Henry, Rex, Chris, anything to make it stop. They were finally released on July 4, 1976, after Karen's family paid a $400,000 bribe. They emerged as walking dead, in excruciating pain, yet emotionally numb. Before leaving her parents' home, Karen freed their family's macaw from his manacle, watching with wonder as he soared away to freedom.
Physical wounds close, psychological ones fester. When Rick and Karen reunited at home, the strain was immediate. Rick appeared frail and detached, pushing away help and demanding only scotch. Though Karen understood his recoil from touch, feeling the same way herself, his rejection still hurt. Karen experienced vivid nightmares where her torturers appeared in her bed. One night, fleeing these terrors, she slipped into their pool and nearly drowned before Rick rescued her. This led to her brief commitment to Sanatorio Santo Amaro, where the doctor's therapy consisted mainly of lecturing her about wifely duties. Rick's coping mechanisms were equally destructive: frequent travel, alcohol, and eventually an affair. When Karen conceived their son, little Rick, she briefly hoped the pregnancy might save their marriage. But trauma doesn't dissolve with good news. When she confronted Rick about his affair, he admitted it dismissively. "It's not a big deal, Karen. I don't love her. She's just a good fuck." Though mistresses were common in Brazil's patriarchal society, Karen knew she could never share the man she loved. Turning to her parents proved futile. Her father refused to help, calling her damaged goods. Her mother sat silently, symbolizing the generational acceptance of male dominance that Karen was determined to break. Leaving Brazil meant overcoming enormous obstacles. Karen had never worked, lived alone, or managed money. All accounts were in Rick's name. Brazilian law required a husband's notarized consent for wives traveling with children. She secretly sold jewelry, opened her own account, and forged travel documents. America meant starting from nothing. Worthless degree, no work experience, a toddler, no support. After 6 months of degrading jobs and unsafe housing, she secured waitressing work. Her lowest point came at 2 a.m., cleaning vomit in a dive bar bathroom, contemplating suicide. Tom Petty's voice on the radio singing about not living like a refugee saved her life. True healing began with Jack Keelt, who pursued her with gentle determination, becoming daddy to little Rick, the most honest, honorable man she'd ever known. They married in 1986, building a life based on mutual respect. With Jack's support, Karen began owning her past without letting it define her. In 2013, Brazil's National Truth Commission invited Karen to testify. Investigator Glenda Mezaroba asked pointedly, "Do you think your father was CIA?" She suggested Karen's arrest was retaliation, the wedding officers sending her father a message. Karen investigated and discovered the CIA coordinated Brazil's 1964 coup and established the American School, where military police learned the torture techniques used on her. Her father had been a CIA agent for 40 years. Testifying before Brazil's National Truth Commission in 2013 released decades of pain for Karen. The commission documented thousands of torture survivors and 484 executions or disappearances, concluding that torture had become an instrument of government power. Many implicated officials defiantly refused to apologize. Karen's detailed accounts established an undeniable historical record, preventing attempts to erase these atrocities. Karen's story doesn't end with justice served. Rick married Biette and moved to Atlanta, reconnecting with little Rick before alcoholism and prison demons claimed his life prematurely. Her father remained bitter until death, refusing forgiveness. Her brother Chris married and had children, but their relationship remained strained. What Karen's story offers is something more valuable than revenge, proof that trauma need not define one's entire existence. With courage, support, and love, it's possible to build a meaningful life after experiencing the worst of human cruelty. Her journey from Brazilian prison darkness to life with Jack demonstrates the remarkable resilience of the human spirit. In a world where authoritarian impulses still threaten democratic institutions, Karen's testimony matters more than ever. Her voice, once silenced through torture, nearly lost to despair, now stands as permanent witness against the forces that sought to destroy her. The parrot's perch was meant to break her. Instead, it forged her into someone unbreakable.